Blog Talk Radio.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot. I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive. No big, I feel like Pac. I shoot a shot. I'm coming in hot. Yeah, coming in hot, just like the fajita. I write what I live, my life in the speaker. I'm nice with the flow, just like the demeanor. I'm feeding my fam, I'm feeding the meter. They got the iron while I got the steamer. I bring the fire, but you never seen her. I testify, I don't need a subpoena. They want my soul, better go to Korea. I love my dog just like I'm Peter. Gotta protect them. I made the call, it was just like I'm reffing. I know we left, yeah, now we back together. But I guess that is better now, later than never. Like, what's happening? I'ma need y'all, quit asking when. Me and my wife gon' have some kids. Right now, we just practicing. Practicing. Teacher said, quit rapping, man. That gon' hurt my average. I said, thank God I ain't average. Yeah. Bright young man, kill the GPA, and the BPM, look we on, so say what you say, cause that's A with Lecrae, from the A train to the A, I'm coming in.
Boom, do the most, coming in, hot,
you always get so
what's
hyped.
Going on, what's going on?
What's going
what
on?
What is going on? Nothing at all. Nothing at all. What's going on, Kia? It's been an awesome, awesome busy week, but awesome. Even though the week just started, it's been a busy week. So,
yes,
what about you? What about you?
Definitely.
How's your week starting going so far?
Definitely a busy week. Definitely, you know, just the days are running together. I'm like, it's Wednesday. Yay. It's just one thing, one day after another. Everything's a blur now.
I know, right? Man, like I was just talking to somebody, and I know that we're in, where are we, in August? But I don't feel like we're in August. I still feel like the year, like we just celebrated New Year's, like a couple weeks ago, right? And by the time we blink, we're past the midway mark of the year. 2021 is kind of gone. It's almost over.
Yeah.
I'm about to go into 2022. So, but you know what? That just means we're doing what we're supposed to. We're not caught up in no BS. So that's always good. When the year goes by fast, I mean, we're doing what we're supposed to. That's how I'm taking it, at least. So,
oh, okay.
I'm
that's
happy
a good way
to
look at
it. Right? I know. We ain't caught up in no BS. Like no drama, none of that junk. So, but, you know, once again, folks, our guy E, you know, he's taking care of some personal business. That guy right there, he is a busy, busy, busy man.
Very busy.
Start making him special guest. Every time you pop up, we just about to call him and make him a special guest. But I know, right? He always got something going on. So he's going to be special guest. That's what he's going to be. We got a good show for y'all. We're going to talk about a couple things. I know we're going to talk about something pretty close to Kia. She hit me with it today. I'm going to let her bring up the subject, but we're going to talk about what she's going to speak on. I'm going to chime in. For those of y'all that are listening early, we definitely appreciate y'all. Give us a call, 845-241-9979. That's 845-241-9979. Join the conversation. We would love to hear from y'all. All right, go ahead, Kia. What you wanna hit us with today?
Well, you know, I was sitting here thinking, and I was like, you know, we always say, and we hear people, especially in the gun community, they always say, "Oh, stay ready, so you don't have to get ready." I know that's Elliot. I was hoping he's gonna be on tonight. I know he was gonna jump all over this, but you know, people always say, "Oh, stay ready, so you don't have to leave. Get ready. You don't have to be ready, so you don't have to."
Yeah.
You know, it's like always be ready. So. And, you know, people, I'm sure that people that may be new to you know, firearms or just in general, like what are they talking about? Like, what does that mean, really? So it's like
yeah.
I wanted to dig into that so and just kind of see what does that mean? What does that mean to you, Dwayne?
And I think that question you just asked right there is key, right? What does that mean to me? Because obviously there's no there's no set blueprint, right? There's no one defined way on what staying ready so you don't have to get ready. So what it means to me is preparation for the worst, right? Or preparation for the unforeseeable. But the big question on top of that is, if it's unforeseeable, how do you prepare for it, right? Well, you kind of just prepare for what you consider the unforeseeable. For me, it could be something as simple as, you know, my car having a flat, right? To some people, that they'll panic, and that'll be the end of their world, right? Or you prepare for something that simple. For us in the gun community, I want to say it's more on the lines of preparing for, you know, if, excuse my language, for when shit hits the fan or when stuff hits the fan, right? And what that looks like for us in the gun community is, well, for me and my household, is if we wake up and we see, you know, a bunch of burning crosses on my lawn. If we wake up and we hear the news where the government has fell and we're left with no law and order. Or it's also for the more realistic or the more something that can probably happen, you know, God forbid, you know, and without the government falling, is what if someone kicks in my door right now? Am I prepared? Is my firearm, my home protection firearm loaded? You know, little things like that. If I don't know, I see for me, it's about the right now. Can I defend my family right now? Where I'm at, you know, can my family defend themselves if I'm not around? You know, right now my wife isn't home. She's out and about. So what does that look like for her? Does she have her concealed on her? Is it ready to go? Is she ready to go? God forbid something happened, you know? So that's what it means to me. For me, it's preparing for that God forbid situation right now. And that's it. Just preparation for that God forbid situation. What does it mean to you? I know I kind of rambled on, but what does it mean to you?
That's all right. So for me, it's like kind of the same thing that you said. So it's like just being prepared for the unforeseen. And that can be in life. You know, I know we say it a lot in the gun community, and I think that if we could drive it home in other areas as well, it's like just being ready for whatever life throws at you. You know, being able to to be prepared for that. So it could be like all those things you said. It could be, hey, what if I get laid off next week? You see what I'm saying? What if I lose my job next week, what's going to happen next? You see what I'm saying? So it could be across the board, but I think that just being able to live in a way that you're ready for whatever, you know, some unexpected things that life may throw at you, and make sure that you're walking in a path that you know exactly where you're going. So it could, I mean, and that could be literally it could be figuratively, or it could be spiritually. You know, just making sure that you're walking in that path that you know where you're going. And I think that's, when I say it, I know that's what I mean. And I know sometimes we're saying it in a way, hey, do you have, you know, in a firearms perspective or self-defense perspective, making sure you're ready for the same things. Make sure you're ready for things that may come at you that you're not, you know, make sure you're prepared for those things. So.
Yeah, and I think that's nearly key. Like, I think your definition was definitely deeper than mine. I'll tell you that right now. But I love it. I absolutely love it because I feel like that is the one thing that we definitely miss, right? We all like to say, well, if something happens, I'm ready. But what does that look like? You know, what does that look like? Even this isn't just a conversation about firearms, folks. You know, this is just a conversation about just preparedness. You know, you don't have to be a gun lover, and we're not saying you got to go out and buy all the ammo and buy all the guns, you know, but what we are saying is if you do have a firearm, do you have enough ammo that if, God forbid, you need to hunker down in your home, can you survive, you know, a shootout, you know? And that sounds so morbid, right? When some people hear that, they're like, oh, my God, a shootout. But it's not, you know, but when we bring reality to it, it's really not, you know. You have a firearm, you have the ammo for that firearm outside of what you conceal with. And if you don't have a firearm, if you're just like, you know what, I don't need firearms, maybe you might be a knife person. Do you have that particular tool on the ready? You know, is it sharpened? Is it in the place that anyone in the family can get to it? And let's say if you're just not a person because, you know, you're like, you know, violence is not the key. Violence is not the key. I would never be like that. I'm kumbaya and all that good stuff. That's cool, too. Let's talk about the other stuff. Do you have enough clothes? Do you have water? Do you have toilet paper? But, you know, everybody goes crazy when we don't have toilet paper. Like, we can't use anything else. Do you have food? Two most important things to me is food. Three most important things to me is food, water, ammo. Those are the three most important things to me.
What happened to shelter?
We have the water, right? And
what
I
about
feel
the
like
shelter?
The thing with shelter is, you know, depending on the situation, you have to be on the move. So I'm assuming that it's really that bad that you can't stay in one particular place, you know? And shelter is something that, in my opinion, you can't always plan 100% on because your shelter can be gone. So the shelter's there because that's where we currently are. And God forbid something happens where we have to relocate, you know, we have another area. But let's say if the current city we're in isn't safe, you know, and we have to relocate, the three things that I know I can take with me is water, food, ammo. And when I say ammo, that ties into my firearm. I don't just want to take ammo or no guns, you know. And does that mean I'm going to take all of my guns? You know, in a perfect world, I would love to load all of my guns up in my vehicle. But no, I'm going to take my most reliable firearm. You know, maybe the firearm that shoots the most known round, right? I'm going to take my 7.62x39. For those of you that don't know those numbers, those are the AK rounds, AK-47 rounds. I'm going to take my 5.56x23. AR, my AR-15, because I know that, God forbid, if I need to, you know, go into a gun store, I can find those ammo easy. Am I taking my 300 blackout? I'm going to take it, but is it the most reliable when it comes down to finding ammo? Probably not, you know, because that's a hard round to find. Am I taking my 9mm versus my 40 or my 45? Absolutely. My 9 is the first thing that I get that I'm taking with me. Even though my conceal is my 40, I'm taking my 9 with me, you know, because I know that, God forbid, I need ammo. More people carry 9 versus the other calibers, right? So, no, I love that question. You know, what does that mean to you? Right, that's such a deep question. I'm gonna start asking that to all my students. What does that mean to you? Getting ready so you don't have to, you know, be ready so you don't have to get ready.
And we have a caller.
You know,
well, I was reading this thing about, like, so, you know, I read all the time about survival and being prepared and prepping and stuff like that. And they were talking about, you know, hydration. So, you know, people stock up on a lot of water. You know, when you're talking about moving around, right? So it's like, hey, how much is, you know, enough? We know how much we probably need, right, per person. But this chart that they provided actually breaks down by your body weight, how much you're going to need. So it's just enough so you can survive. I thought it was a pretty cool chart. How much you weigh, Dwayne?
Oh, how much I weigh? I weigh a whopping 172, man. I'm proud of it.
So for someone, let's say they weigh 180 pounds a daily, you would need at least 72 ounces of water to be just enough for you to survive. And I thought it was pretty cool because, you know, you can round up, round down or whatever. But, you know, people always say, oh, you need a gallon per person. Well, if it really comes down to it, right, you could at least have, you know, this based on the weight. It even goes to 20 pounds for children. They need at least 8 ounces daily, at least 8 ounces daily just to survive.
Yeah.
You might be, you know, you may not be in your most optimal, you know, physique, right? But if you can at least get that a day, you will survive. So I thought it was pretty cool, you know, just reading little things like that.
You know,
so maybe we can kind of go over those things like once a week, like when we go like for a couple of minutes, just talking about some of those things, just so the people are aware, because you never know, right?
Oh yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think that's a great idea. You know, that ties back to the show we had, I want to say like 3 or 4 shows ago now, when we talked about prepping, right? And I know a lot of people like to say, when the conversation around prepping comes up, you know, for those folks that's not into prepping or don't really get it, they think it's a paranoid behavior.
You know, you're prepping, you're paranoid. What's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is up to me. You know, some people can see a plane flying to, you know, into a house, and to them that's not the worst thing ever. You know what I mean? Some people can see a car flying, driving to a side of a house, and to them that's the end of their world. So prepping to me is not going to mean the same thing that it means to you, T, or somebody else. And again, a lot of people think that it's a very paranoid thing. Folks, it's not. It's you don't always have to prep in the sense that the world's coming to an end today.
Right.
You know, it can be
preparing for your,
let's prep.
Preparing for your power to go out. A storm.
Yeah, exactly. Something
it can be
that
anything.
Simple, right? So,
right.
It can become can definitely be anything. Even because I say that we prep a lot in our lives. I don't even realize it. You know, like you said, you're preparing for the storm to go out. Something as simple as your next role in your job. You know, you may
right.
be working on, you know, learning a new skill so that you can possibly get promoted. So what are you doing? You're prepping for the next step. It's no different.
That's right.
Why
yeah.
do we make it so different when we throw survival onto it? Why am I paranoid? If I come to you and I say, listen, I'm prepping to take this next step in my life, you know, in 2 weeks I'm going to be going back to school, I'm going to be doing this, I'm going to be putting money into my savings account. Why is that okay? Why is me coming saying, hey, Kia, folks, I'm about to save $500 every paycheck. I'm going to be cheered. Oh, great job. I see you're preparing for, God forbid, anything happens to you in the future. But if I say every time I get paid, I'm going to go spend $100 and buy some ammo, you're going to say, oh, my goodness, isn't 2 boxes of ammo good enough? No, it's not good enough. Because, again, when stuff hits the fan, you're going to come knock at my door for ammo, right? And guess what I'm going to say?
Yeah.
I'm say, you didn't buy any. I may not say that, but it depends on who you are. I may say that, you know?
Right.
But, again, prepping, I hate when people look at it as you're being paranoid. You know, I hate that.
Let's pick up our caller. And let's see what our caller has to
yeah.
say.
I already see
Let's
who
see.
Our caller is. I already know. I see
too.
All in ones. I see all in ones.
Let me see. Welcome to Point Blank.
Man, I didn't watch y'all what? Accuse me of being a stranger or nothing like that.
What's going on, Sarge? How you doing, Sarge?
It's all good. How you folks doing?
We're doing good.
We're doing good,
How
man.
You doing?
We're doing good.
I'm doing great because I'm hearing you guys talking about war gaming and scenarios, and I don't think there's, other than actually tapping the trigger on firearms training, there are a few things better than going over scenarios and contingencies in your mind and acting them out. That was one of the things I stressed in my instruction to my students when I was a police firearms instructor. For instance, I would tell them, look, I know you guys, when you're on patrol and you got a partner and you're going back, you want to gossip and you want to talk about the fine hammer you was with last night, and you want to talk about the baseball scores and what Michael Jordan is doing or whatever, this, that, and the other. But from time to time, just war game things in your beat. What am I going to do if right now this scenario was happening? This guy was jumping behind his bill with a gun. It was a burglary, and he's running out from the boat with a gun in his hand, or this car stops over here and this thing happens. Just go over these things briefly as to what you're going to do. And we worked out one thing, and I did this with my wife because, you know, I'm off duty, and I'm off duty with her, and, you know, and I wanted her to know what action I would want her to take so we'd be confronted with an emergency. One thing we did with my partner, we called a duress drill. I know you're familiar with the classical hostage target, where, you know, the offender's got a forearm arm bar over the guy's neck, and the other hand's
yeah.
got the gun temple. Well, me and my partner worked out a scenario, like, say he gets disarmed or he gets caught in a situation like that. I still got my piece. I've got it out. And we had a little drill set up where we would do what we would do in the event of it. And since it required both of us to take an action, we had these code phrases set up. The person who was in the most peril, the one with the gun to his head, you know, the officer with the gun to his head would have to be the one to decide whether or not he expects me to do this or not. So we start with saying, you know, and then you see your name, you know, insert name there. I think we better do what this guy says. And then I would respond with, looks like you're right. And then I'd be waiting for his cue. We better do it right now. When I hear the word now, I know he's going to lift up his arm and just drop all of his weight. The suspect's not going to be able to hold it. I'm going to take a shot to the guy's T-zone if I can. If I can't hit it, I'm just start pumping around center mass once my partner's out of the way. And we had this thing figured out. We even set up targets on the range that would allow us to pull a cable, drop the target, and do what we said with those words in place.
You know,
and we do things like this. This scenario thing is really important just for no other reason than to just get your mind in the set to take action, to go from 0 to 100, which is what you may literally have to do. I had done similar things with my wife. I said, look, if we're confronted with an armed robber off duty, and I'm off duty and you're with me, you know I'm packing. If I say something, you know that I'm going to take some action if we're not shot right away. And, you know, yeah. I think those things are really important to do. And I think every family should do things like that. They should come up with duress drills, contingency drills, any number of things to try to, even if you never see that specific scenario, just to get your mind running as to how you can react in
unexpected situations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a definitely important thing. You know, again, Kia asked earlier, what does, you know, get ready so you don't have to be ready. I think just running those type of drills with your loved ones is very key. You know, it's one of those things, again, people think it's a paranoid mentality, but it's really not. It doesn't have to always be about protection, right? We talk protection because this is the industry that we're in, and we're also taking protection of ourselves and our family very seriously, so it's always in a conversation. But it can be something as simple as if you're into sports and for me, I play basketball. If I'm coming off the bench or if I'm riding the bench and the star player gets hurt, am I ready? Have I been practicing? Have I been doing my reps? Have I been putting shots up? Have I been going to the court and doing everything I need so that, guess what? Here's my opportunity to get into the game. Am I ready? You know, it's the same thing when it comes down to the firearm industry. You know, God forbid you're walking around with your concealed. You don't have a plan. You've never went to the range. You've never practiced drawing from the holster. You've never done anything. You went, bought your gun, went and got your concealed license from one of us, and that was it. But you've never practiced, never dry fired, never loaded your magazine, never did nothing. And guess what? Here comes somebody coming up behind you with their firearms threatening you, and now you're in this life-threatening situation, and guess what? You're not ready, you know, because you didn't do what you got to do to be prepared. You know, I love those scenarios, Stars. I think those are some things that I'll definitely challenge our listeners to do is put yourself in those scenarios. Put your loved one in those scenarios, and then mix it up. You know, mix it up. Definitely don't keep the scenario the same, because you should never – always be able to master a scenario, because guess what changes in real time? No two criminals act exactly the same. Some may act close,
right?
But no two criminals are going to act exactly the same. I love it, especially with those kids that's old enough to, you know, I practice scenarios with my kids, and they don't walk around with a gun. The scenarios that we talk about outside doesn't involve them coming over to me, grabbing my gun and shooting. It could be something as simple as if you see mommy and daddy in a situation, take cover. You know, run to them. I took my kids to a Denny's not too long ago, and I was like, you know what? I don't like the way this Denny's is situated. It's like everything is just glass. For some reason for that particular day, y'all know when you get that weird feeling like I shouldn't be here. But I was like, you know what? I don't want to. Just something don't feel right. And I said, all right, kids, God forbid anything happens, what do you all need to do?
Yeah,
and
one thing, you know,
there was
a gentleman named Feld Marshal Helmuth von Moltke the Elder. Now, I know a lot of people ain't heard about him, but he was a very famous German general. He was the architect of victories over Denmark, Austria, and France. And he had a famous saying, you probably heard it, you didn't know it was him that said it, no plan survives contact with the enemy. And that is true. That is true. But there is no military unit or any persons that don't plan for contact with the enemy, whether it happens or not, because planning for contact with the enemy will put you in a mind frame to be able to deal with it, because deal with the situation. Because one thing, I studied hundreds of gunfights. I used to write to police departments all over the country to get information on their gunfights and their analysis and reports of gunfights their officers were. The best resource I had was the New York City Police Department. They have a fantastic, very detailed examination of gunfights their officers have been involved in that go back 80, 90 years. It's fantastic. It was one of my best training resources, and their gun training unit was firearms training unit. That's what it was called. They were very helpful in providing me with all the information I needed. And the one thing I can say about gunfights and studying hundreds of them and seeing a couple of them as a police officer that I was in myself, they have a great deal of things in common. All of them do. There's many things they have in common. But there may be even more that they don't have in common. The variables are what sets them apart. And it's that makes it so endlessly fascinating as to how you should respond to anything. And you just can't take anything for granted. There are a few things more dynamic than a gunfight in progress or one that is ended and everybody else is analyzing it for you.
Wow.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and it's things like that that people will hear, like tune into this show and hear and be like, oh, my gosh, they're so paranoid. Oh, my gosh, they're so crazy. You know, and it's like, no, you can apply this to everyday living. You can apply these things to everyday happenings. And if, and then the worst thing, I think, Dwayne, you said something earlier about what's the worst that can happen. And it's like the worst that can happen is something happens and you're like, I didn't listen to them when they were telling me. Or, hey, they were talking about this on this show, and I thought it was so silly, and I didn't prepare. There's nothing like sitting there saying, dang, I knew I should have brought that jack. You know what I'm saying? It's happened. Oh, gosh, I saw those jumper cables sitting right there on the thing, and I didn't grab them. You know, it could be something as simple as that. It's like just not being, you know, just not being prepared. I mean, it doesn't hurt. Like you said, it doesn't have to be anything extreme. You don't have to go through tactical maneuvers or anything like that, but at least maybe, like you said, Sarge, talk to your spouse, talk to your kids, determine what you're going to do. If this happens, let's do this. If this happens, let's do that. But other than, it's like, that's, it doesn't have to go beyond that, but at least you have some kind of preparedness to you and not just walking around blind in this world like, hey, everything's great, because this world is not, you know, it's not the nicest place, you know, so you have to just, unfortunately, this is the world that we live in, so.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree. It's preparation, man. Again, that mindset, man, that mindset is, I think that's a very toxic mindset, that we judge before we even think about what it means. And I'm going back to that whole, people think we're paranoid because we want to be prepared for whatever comes our way. So you're telling me because I went and bought a gas can, I'm paranoid. Because I went and bought water, food, toilet paper, a bigger jack, thicker jumper cables, and paranoid. And I haven't even touched the firearms yet. Oh, my God. They say way more crazier stuff when we talk about firearms. But yet, we have a lot of people out there that's couponing, right? And they're not couponing because they're preparing for anything. They're couponing because they figured out the system of how to get a bunch of stuff for dirt cheap. But no one judges them and says, hey, you're paranoid. They actually do the opposite. They'll say, hey, teach me what you're doing so I can get more stuff and probably sell it.
Right.
Yeah, make a profit versus what's the difference? We're doing the same thing, except my reason is for self-preservation and their reason is for profit, right? Another thing I wanted to touch on too, Kia, and I'm glad you brought this up, it's also a mindset, right? But now I'm going to go back to the firearm. When for those of us that conceal or open carry, if you're in an open carry state, there's a mindset that we need to come to terms with before we leave the house with your firearm. Number one, you got to realize that part of the get ready so you don't have to be ready, or be ready so you don't have to get ready, right? Part of that starts from up top. It doesn't start with you holding your gun, practicing. It starts from up top. But you can do all the practice, dry fires, runs in the world. If your mindset isn't a realistic mindset, you're not going to be able to do anything with that knowledge, right?
Right.
So one of the things I love to tell my students is, before you walk out the house with your firearm, you have to acknowledge that once you step foot through that door, you are a different person and you have different responsibilities
right.
because you have that firearm, right? And number two, you have to come to terms that this day that you're walking outside with your firearm on your hip or concealed could possibly be the day that you take someone's life. You have
right.
to mentally come to terms with that. You can't, you know, I told that to a couple of students, and they was like, well, I don't ever want to take no one's life. No one's saying that you have to take someone's life or you want to take someone's life. But you have to come to terms that the reality around you carrying your firearm is for what? It's not for fashion, right?
Right.
It's not for fashion. It's not to look cute or look tough. It's for self-protection. And the reality around what self-protection with a firearm looks like is you're going to draw that gun and pull that trigger, and that bullet's going to exit that firearm and hit someone and potentially do more than just stop the threat. Stopping
right.
the threat don't mean the person's going to end up in a hospital and be all good. It means that you may take someone's life in the process of you protecting yourself, a loved one, a friend, a family member, or even being just having that sheepdog mentality. And for those of you that don't know the sheepdog mentality, it's pretty much the person that takes care of that looks after the herd, right? You know, a sheepdog goes and chases after to keep the herd in order. That's kind of what that mentality is. So that's the one thing I always tell my students, and I'll tell our listeners that as well. Come to terms with that before you leave your house. And if you can't come to terms with that, the reality is you're more of a threat to yourself and to people around you with that firearm than you're not, because you have to come
that's
to terms
right.
with that.
That's true. That's definitely true. And that's the same thing mm-hmm. I tell my students, too. I tell them, you know, first let's think about mentality. Right? So you have to have the mentality, because now, like you said, once you put that gun on and you walk outside of your home with that firearm,
yeah.
then now, you know, you have to know that, are you able to pull that trigger? There's been so many studies of people that were unable to pull the trigger, and someone used that firearm against them. So it's like, if you're not ready, don't do it. And I tell them,
yeah.
I tell my students that all the time, if you're not ready, don't do it. Because the last thing you want to do is be out there, you know, waving a gun around, right? And you're not sure, or you're not, you don't feel comfortable. Because the first thing is, you know, you can hit someone else, or you could, you know, it could just end up being altogether bad. So just if you don't feel comfortable yet,
yeah.
just don't do it. Until you do
yeah,
so
you know one thing that I always was always torn about because of the propagandistic nastiness of the anti-gun crowd was what type of silhouette target to get and to choose. I was, you know, they leave it to me when they gave me a bunch of vendors I could apply to purchase targets from, a list of who vendors. And you know,
right.
I would get, you know, I'm in my department, you know, and when I was going to replenish our stocks, I was talking to him getting like a black silhouette or one with a human face, or you know, an actual human representation of a human being. And I always decide in the final analysis to choose one that looks like a human being, that is a human being, a photographic representation of a human being, because I thought, look. That's what you're shooting. You're not going to be shooting at black targets unless it's in the night. You can't see anything else.
That's
it's
right.
in the daytime or any light illuminated situation. You're going to be shooting at a human being. Now,
right.
you know, people would
mm-hmm.
say, now, wait a minute now. They're going to say you're trying to kill people. Say, no, look, I know what they're going to say. My job is to prepare my students for this grim reality as best I know how. And I've got to get them accustomed to the notion they may have to end a human life. It doesn't get any graver than that. That's how seriously I take it, because I want them
right.
to be looking at a human representation. Because yeah. you're not going to be shooting a blank silhouette. It's not going to like, you know, one of these Fantasia images that just walking around, you know, that's all black. You know, no, it's going to be a human being. And you got mm-hmm. you got to steel yourself to accepting that's what you're going to shoot at.
Yeah, no, that is so true.
It had scoring
so
rings on
so
it, though.
True.
You know, they put scoring rings on it, but still, it was actually a human being that I had up there.
Yeah.
How do people react to that?
That's part of the living.
How do people react to that?
I take very seriously the notion of taking a human life. I mean, and I don't want anyone to think that's potentially not what you're doing. Now, hopefully, ideally, you can stop the threat without killing them, but if you kill them, so bloody well be it. Because unless taking a life is justified, you shouldn't be shooting them in the first place.
Yeah.
So, Sarge, how do people react to the lifelike silhouettes? How do they react to that?
At first, they were a little uncomfortable about it, and my bosses were too. But I did manage to convince them of the merit of my side, and I said, look, you know, when it comes down to shooting scenarios, I've already explained to it. We had to send the paper up to the Illinois Attorney General, and we have to sign off on it and approve. They did, especially when I put the rationale for the change for the silhouettes, and they accepted it. The AG I spoke to who had signed off on it said, yeah, you know, I think we got a pretty good rationale for saying why we did it. And most of the officers said, yeah, it did make them think more seriously about what the purpose of what we were doing here meant. And I've got to say that even though, thankfully, I never had to shoot an individual in the line of duty in 26 years, I had five officers I instructed that did, and every one of them came up to me and said that the training I gave them was key or instrumental in them prevailing in the gunfight. And that I am most proud of anything I have ever done as a police officer.
And like I said, that makes total sense because I know that I was looking at a survey. I'm in a firearms instructor group on LinkedIn, and they asked the question, where do the scenarios, you know, fall short? And almost, I think it was like, I was trying to find it, the survey, but it was like 70-something percent of the people said unrealistic. And so if you think about it, it is, if we're just putting up little rings on the targets, right, it is unrealistic. Yes, it's so great that we can, you know, hit that little red circle in the middle of that target. But I tell people this all the time. It's different when you're talking about someone who wants to learn how to target shoot and do bullseye shooting, and it's different than when you're doing self-defense shooting. Because self-defense shooting, hey, if you get in the vicinity and you hit the right thing, you're good. But it's like, you know, if you're doing bullseye training or something like that, then yes, then you, of course.
Yeah, you know, so one thing about realistic training is you have to balance safety considerations against the need for realistic training. And, of course, the most realistic firearms training I got was in the Army. We had live fire exercises, and we were literally losing live ammunition and maneuvering. You can't get any better other than actually shooting at actual people in the training, which is why force-on-force training is so good now. Because we didn't have, when I was in, we didn't have available kind of sim munitions they got available now that makes it even better now than ever. Because you can actually use live ammunition against maneuvering living people without killing them or seriously injuring them. And But you got to balance safety considerations against realism. And that's always a dynamic tension. But you got to try to find the best balance between the two, because I think nothing is better for firearms training for survival than realism. Nothing trumps it.
And I think we're not going to shoot at each other, of course, but that the realistic targets seem very reasonable.
Yeah.
What do you think, Dwayne?
But you know what? So I like it. I like it. I know you say that we're not going to shoot at each other, but one of the things that I'm actually putting into my curriculum when it comes down to conceal is, you know, shooting at me. You know, of course, it's not going to be with live ammo. For those of you that are listening, we're not going to use live ammo. We're going to make sure that the real guns with the live ammo was put away safely. We're going to be using prop guns and airsoft guns with no pellets or BBs in them. But it's all about situational awareness. And I believe that when a lot of people go to the range and they're just shooting down range at a paper target, like Sarge says, it's not shooting back at you or it's not closing in on you, that feeling of scare and realism don't hit you. You know what I mean? So now it just becomes it's kind of like a real life video game. I hate to put it that way, but I had a couple students tell me that's how they felt when they go to the traditional range. It feels like a real life video game. I'm just trying to hit the bullseye over and over and over again. But the reality is your goal is not to hit the bullseye over and over again. That is not a realistic expectation to have. Your goal, like Star says, is to hit center mass. You know, I had a student ask me, well, can I just shoot him in the leg? What if I shot someone in the leg? Can I claim self-defense? And would it still be considered use of deadly force? And I was like, you cannot. You can claim self-defense however you want. You know, I can randomly go out and shoot someone on purpose. No, not say I won't do it on purpose, but you guys get what I mean, you know. I can go out and just shoot someone and be the threat. And I can turn around and claim self-defense. Would it be looked at as self-defense? You know, how much of that gray area have I closed? And I had to tell them, like, look, you don't ever want to give warning shots. That's TV magic. You don't ever want to intentionally shoot someone in the leg before you're slowing them down because you can't really claim that you've feared for your life. And you're going to get hit with the same charge regardless. Shooting them in the leg is no different than hitting them center mass because guess what can happen? You can hit an artery.
Guys are familiar with the 1986 FBI shooting in Miami involving those two felons, Lester Maddox and Vernon Platt and Lester Maddox. Those two men were both Army Ranger trained, both of them were. And early in the gunfight, one of the agents that was killed, Agent Jerry Dove, shot Maddox in his artery, the artery, brachial artery on the right side of his body. He was dying. He was literally a dead man walking. But he was goal-oriented and determined, objective-oriented, very fit, and determined to stay in the fight. He maneuvered throughout the fight. When he got out of that car, he maneuvered on those FBI agents. And they were fired from static positions. He flanked them. He was pinned them down with the fire from his Mini 14, and he flanked them and was able to shoot several of them after it. Maybe he was a dead man walking. He was a dead man walking. The round from Officer Dove's 9mm severed his brachial artery. He was bleeding to death. But he was determined to finish the fight. He stayed in the fight. And the only thing that finally got him was Officer Agent Morales' shotgun when they were trying to escape after he had shot and wounded several of the FBI agents. He got back in the car, horribly wounded. I mean, the man's dying. He's trying to start the car and get moving again. And Agent Morales, who had already had his arm disabled by gunfire from Maddox Mini 14, he with one hand he was able to cock and load his 870 shotgun, which is, again, why you got to use these drills. You know, what if you become disabled? How can you load your firearm? How can you reload your firearm? How can you operate a pump shotgun? Well, Agent Morales did exactly that with one hand, because the one arm was useless. And he went back and he killed both of them as they were trying to escape with the 870 shotgun. But that gunfight was so eye-opening to me, reading it, the analysis of it. And as you know, the FBI changed a lot of the equipment and tactics after that gunfight because of what was learned from it.
Yeah. See, not surprised. Not surprised at all.
Yeah. Me either.
Yeah. So like I said, shooting someone in the leg, I was an infantryman. I saw a lot of people hit and wounded, and they were not stopped by major caliber rifle hits. I'm talking about from RPD light machine. We had a platoon sergeant. He had took three RPD light machine gun hits his knife. I don't know if you're familiar with an RPD light machine gun, but it shoots the same cartridge as an AK-47, 7.62x39.
Yeah.
And he three of them in his chest. And he kept leading us. He kept leading his platoon the rest of the day until the firefight was over. He got the Distinguished Service Cross. I've seen other people wounded and badly hit and wounded and continue in the fight. I mean, shattered limbs. There was a North Vietnamese, so we were ambushed in the North Vietnamese. We were doing a minesweep detail. I was a tank commander. I was on top of a cupola of an M48A3 tank. Had a 50 caliber machine gun. I'm sitting behind. And when they opened up on us, apparently we were getting near a supply cache of theirs. They wanted to protect it. The ones that were there wanted to get away from it. And it left a couple of them to stay behind while they pinned us down. And they started shooting at us, and I saw where some of the fire was coming from. So one of the RPGs, I saw the back blast and where it shot. I opened up my 50 caliber. I had a ruptured cartridge case. It stopped shooting after about 8 or 9 rounds. I had a ruptured cartridge case. I couldn't repair the gun until the fight was over, so I just jumped back down in the turret and started directing my gunner because I couldn't shoot the 50 anymore. After the fight was over, they came across bodies. One of them had the RPG, and he had his leg shot off, and you could tell it was a 50 caliber that did it. I had the only 50 caliber on that minesweep detail that day. He was shooting back the whole time with his leg halfway blown off. Halfway blown off by the 50 caliber machine gun round. He was still shooting back.
Well, that debunks that theory then, huh? That debunks that theory.
Yeah, I mean,
that's not going to stop
us. It's amazing how tough the human body is. It is just amazing how much punishment the human body can take and can still continue to function. It really is. People have no idea.
Yeah.
You can be maimed very easily, and you can be crippled for life, but it's a lot harder to kill people than people give the human body credit for. It can take an amazing amount of punishment, and people can do incredible things after they're wounded.
Yeah.
Sure. So, Dwayne, what else? There were some other things you wanted to go over tonight, too, Dwayne. What else did you want to go over? I know there were some other things, too.
You got me in on this subject. I like this subject a lot. I think it's very important. You know, we talk about the law a lot on our show, about just preparing and knowing the law. And that is also something that you should also know, is definitely the law, which I want to talk about as well. But it's important, folks, to be prepared. Be prepared. Even if you think you don't want, even if you're like, you know what, the world is not going to end tomorrow and all this other yada, 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 it don't matter. Be prepared. It could be something as simple as before you go to bed, do you walk your house to make sure all your windows are locked? Simple.
Right.
That's simple.
Right. Right.
That's simple. Right. Did you make sure that your doors are locked? You know, did you make sure you probably had a bunch of people over? Did you make sure that before everyone left, you swept your house? You know, are you being paranoid? No, but there's people out there that they're just evil people out there, and they don't care. You know, there's this creepy video that's on, it's all over social media about that guy in Vegas and how he just walked up to the lady, to the house, and it was captured on the Ring doorbell, and he was just saying something along the lines like, I know you're in there.
Oh, yeah, come
out.
You're
in there.
I know you're in there. I want the lady
come
that's
out.
In the house. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, let me in. Let me in. I want. And he sounded so nice and so genuine. But clearly there's a bunch of screws loose in his head, right? Now,
exactly.
Where was that family prepared? They were prepared because guess what? They had a doorbell that they can see what's going on. They had a Ring doorbell. And from the article I read, I believe when she heard him at the door, because she answered the door, and that's what got him talking. And as soon as she saw it and heard it, she took off and she hid in her house, you know? And the husband was the one, or it was the dude that answered on the Ring when the guy started to walk away. He said, hey, can I help you? And then he went back and he was talking to whatever guy. I don't want to assume it was the husband, but it was a male voice that was over it. But were they prepared? Absolutely. they didn't, it wasn't about guns and none of that stuff, but they were prepared for something. And I'm pretty sure at some point they probably said, hey, friends and family, we're buying a doorbell that has a camera built into it. And their friends and family is probably like, man, you're paranoid. Why don't you just answer your door the old-fashioned
way? Right.
Guess what? If
right.
Answer the door the old-fashioned way, they have, who knows what would have happened? Who knows what would have happened to that poor lady? You know what I mean? So, again, preparation. I'm pretty sure, Kia, if that dude would have showed up at your house, it would have been
you said what, Dwayne?
I said if he would have showed up at your door, it would have been a whole different story. I already
honey,
know that right now. That lady,
don't get me started.
I know. You know, but again, were they prepared? So there's one thing to be prepared, but then do you have a backup plan? You know what I mean? Do you have a plan B that needs to become your – do you have a plan B to replace your plan A? You know, and that's where I really love what you said, Sarge, you know, come up with those situations. But don't just sit on that one situation. Change it up. Change it up. Throw something outrageous out there. You know, today is the bad guy. Tomorrow is the alien. Oh, I know it sounds,
well, you know,
it sounds fictional.
And Dwayne,
what would you do?
What you saying that, Dwayne,
oh,
that's why,
wait,
you know, I was watching a movie one time. Hold on, Sarge. I was watching a movie one time, Dwayne. That's how I came up with the can opener thing. Because, you know, this family, they had all these canned goods. Like, they were ready and stocked and da-da-da. And they had an electric can opener. So they had all this food that they couldn't eat. And that from watching that movie, that's how I said, oh, shoot, I need to have a manual can opener. Because, hello, you can have all this stuff stocked up and ready and prepared, and then you can't even eat it, and you'll sit there and die and starve with a house full of food because you can't get in the cans. Well, you know, we all know if you grew up in, you know, in a certain household, I won't say, but you knew how to get into the can. But the point of the matter is, you know, it's like, hey, you need a manual can opener. Right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah,
sorry. Go ahead.
There is somebody I think you guys need to read about if you haven't read about him already, a civilian who is probably one of the greatest gunfighters I ever read of. He was a shop owner in Los Angeles. His name is Lance Thomas. Are any of you familiar with him?
No,
I'm not
at all.
All right. Well, then I guarantee you guys want to look up his story. This guy, I think he killed 5 or 8 people in gunfights from robbers, armed robbers trying to get into a store. And I think 5 or 6 shooting scenarios. And he prepared himself to be a gunfighter. I mean, he literally prepared himself to be a gunfighter. He didn't want to.
Hey, Sarge,
but
I wanna
ready to leave his shop
quick,
yet. And he was determined to defend
Sarge,
him.
I want
to
say one thing real quick. I don't mean to cut you off, but folks that's listening, I know – don't think that we're straight up advocates of killing, you know? Because there might be some people out there like, hey, we just want to kill. No, we're just full advocates of speaking the harsh reality that some people don't get to see. And Sarge, he's seen it from a little time of us talking and getting to know Sarge in like the last, 10 shows? He's seen a lot. So don't think that we're advocates of just going out there and the first thing we do is draw our gun. No, so I don't want you all to think that. Go ahead, sir. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Oh, yeah. I hope no one gets the idea that we're bloodthirsty because having seen it, you become less bloodthirsty. You also realize better be ready to do it if that's what you're in line to do. I mean, it's kind of like either or, and that's literally what it is. But if you don't know about Lance Thomas, I urge you to study this man and his preparation for gun combat. That was astonishing. He was every bit as good as any police officer I've ever heard of. And in his preparations and everything else, he's on the web. You can find lots of stories on him about what he accomplished on the web. It was in the late 80s, and it's simply amazing. He after the first time, he said he wasn't that prepared. He was kind of lucky. And he said, if it ever happens again, I'm going to be ready. And he prepared himself. And lo and behold, it happened 5 or 6 more times. And I think he said, I think I've had enough. He decided to sell the shop and get out of it for good. Mm. But look him up. Lance Thomas is his name. I think they even did a profile on him on 60 Minutes or that ABC show, these ABC Tonight or whatever it was, they had a couple profiles on him. Really quite an amazing story.
You know, Dwayne, it's funny. Mm-hmm. I sat here and I thought about this for a minute, that we had to preface and stop and say, oh, we're not talking about going out and killing people. But you, what's the number one box office smash hit at the movies and Netflix? There, most of them are action movies with killing and gunslinging.
Oh, yeah.
Fast racing. Yep. But when we talk about self-defense, we have to give a disclaimer that we're not trying to talk, you know, just going out and killing. You know, that's just really, that, you know, that's just, you know, hey, that's just what I was just thinking, like, why would we even have to say that? But we're not saying that, that you have to go out and necessarily kill someone, because if one thing that we do teach in class, I know, Dwayne, you do as well, is that to de-escalate. And also, situational awareness, so you don't even have to be in these situations. The ones you can't avoid, avoid them. But if you find yourself, the last thing, I'll go back to my original statement, the last thing you want to do is find yourself in a situation and you have not prepared yourself on how you can possibly get out of it. Because that is the, I mean, I can't imagine sitting there like, oh my gosh, like, I could have just listened, you know, and you're in the middle of a situation and you can't get out of it. And unfortunately, a lot of people find themselves, we can see videos day after day of people that things break out and they trample each other and they, you know, or they die because they don't know what to do next or they're not prepared and things of that nature. And I'm sure in their mind, it may have said, you know, hey, shoot, I wish I had a, you know, or something. You never know. But it's like,
man,
I don't want to be
worst,
in that situation.
Right? I wish I had a.
God ever died, I didn't have to kill anybody as a police officer. But it was my preparation, I think, and my training that prevented me from having to do so, because I was usually able to get them at a disadvantage, so I didn't have to shoot them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the only way you'll know how to do that is to study and train to do that. And that's the thing. It's like a lot of people like that. It kind of bothers me that we have to even explain and go through the time to explain all of this. But it's like people will actually be like, oh, my God, all they talk about is guns. All they talk about is shooting. All they talk about killing people. Well, the truth of the matter is, if you don't want – I mean, it's like I hope none of those people are at the movies watching any of – Kill Bills or any of these other movies or whatever else that may come out, you know, because, you know, what was the one? What was the last one? Equalizer, John Wick, all those different things. And these are people, they made these people billionaires. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's like, but we can't talk about it as it pertains to real life.
People prefer fantasy to real life anyway. And let's say there's few things grimmer than having to kill another human being. It really is. And it's, oftentimes there's some things that are never more necessary if you want to save yourself and your loved ones. So both are true.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And again, if you're practicing situational awareness, now, like I said, you can probably get yourself out of these situations and see things coming that someone else may not be able to see. You can go ahead and get yourself out of it. You know, if you hear something that doesn't sound right in Walmart, you can hit that back exit door, you and your family, and get out and get away. But if you find, if you're surprised and you turn around and find yourself in a situation, you don't want to be panicked and say, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The kid's looking at you like, what do we do, mommy and daddy? What do we do? And you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people can get upset and say, is it necessarily talk about that? But, you know, I always think about, if you look at your kid in the face and your child's looking at you like, mommy, what do we do? Or daddy, what do we do? And you don't have an answer. I think talking about it, even though we don't like to talk about killing and having to do other things, it's like, I would rather talk about it now than look at my kid in the face and not know what to do to protect her.
All of my instructors in the Army and my combat units were all combat veterans, and none of them pulled any punches, and they got me mentally prepared for combat. I'm telling you that right now. No matter how good the training is, nothing really prepares you for combat, but to the extent it is possible to get me ready for it, the instructors I had did, because they didn't baby us at all, not even a little bit. They let us know what we were facing and going to be in for. And they literally mentally prepared us for what we might have to go through. I am forever grateful to those men.
That's dope.
Yeah. But that's why, you know, we with this show, we want to change the narrative of how people think about things because, like I said, you know, we can watch violent movies, we listen to violent songs, we, you know, we play violent video games, but we can't talk about self-defense.
Yeah, we can't talk about it. It's so taboo that we can't even bring it up, you know? That's the crazy
part.
We're
going to bring it up. I guess that's one good thing about having our own show.
I really appreciate about you guys is that you are making it clear as to what the ultimate aim of this is. The ultimate aim is having to use a firearm to stop an imminent deadly attack in progress that may result in the ending of a human life. I mean, anything less than that is to a disservice to your students and to the very idea of self-defense.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
That I know you asked me earlier what else did I want to speak on, and it ties back to a little bit about this as well, you know, preparation and just being better prepared for the unforeseeable, right? And I feel when it comes down to the firearm industry, preparation goes outside of training. I tell my students all the time, the easiest thing to do is to pick up that gun, pull the trigger, and make it go bang. That's the easiest thing we can do, right? Now, accuracy and all the other stuff, that comes with a little bit of training. Better accuracy comes with a lot of training. But the easiest thing to do is to go buy that gun, pick it up, pull the trigger, make it go bang. The hardest thing to do, and that process never changed, right? It's pick the gun, I want that. Pick it up, that process don't change. Pull the trigger, every gun you got to pull the trigger. When you pull the trigger, if it's loaded, guess what it's going to do? It's going to go bang. That never changes, right? Guess what changes, folks? The law, right? I know we talk about the law a lot on this show because it's one of those things that we have to constantly talk about because it's consistently changing. And I wanted to, and that's why I love when you said you wanted to talk about being prepared. I'm like, oh my God, why is this lady? She's always reading my mind. You always like you. That's why you're the queen of the show, Kia. You're always right on it. Reciprocity. I believe in everything that's going on right now around the gun industry. We have a lot of states making a lot of changes, and we have some for the better, some for the worse. And even the ones that seem like it's for the better, guess what? You got to read the fine print and redefine the print and tie it all together, right? But the one thing that I always harp on with my students is the one single word, reciprocity. What does reciprocity mean, folks? Folks, an agreement between two parties. In the firearm world, it's an agreement between one state and another around concealment, specifically concealment. And the reason I think this ties back so perfectly to preparation is because a lot of times we'll get our firearms in one state, get our concealed if needed in our current state, knowing that we like to travel, and guess what? We now go and travel with parents. We have to prepare. We don't just keep our gun on our hip and go to the neighboring state without preparing. Remember what I said earlier? When you walk out the house with your firearm, you have to act like you're a different person. The mindset has to be there. This also ties into your ability to legally carry said firearm across state lines. And that's why I think reciprocity is so important. Folks, like I tell all my students, check out reciprocity. Go to one of the sites I utilize a lot is the USCCA site, USCCA, type of reciprocity. Or I think US Law School have a really good reciprocity map as well. But I wanted to speak on a couple things and hear what y'all two have to tie into preparing to travel from state to state, right? So you know I love my list, Kia. I definitely love my list. So here is Dwayne's 5 to 7 things that you need to know before you travel with your firearm. And I'm not talking about via plane. I'm talking about via car. Number one, if you conceal, Can you conceal in the state you're going into? What do y'all think? That's a valid one. Can you conceal in that state? Can you legally conceal?
Definitely valid.
Per your conceal in that state. If I'm going to North Carolina, am I just going to jump in the car and say it's my connecting state, I'm going to go? Because they have to accept it because we're just a street apart from each other? Absolutely not. I'm going to go onto the reciprocity map, click Virginia, look and see what North Carolina restrictions are with Virginia, and if there's no restrictions, cool. That means I can conceal. That's the first thing I'm going to do. If it's a state that has certain restrictions, guess what? I'm going to do myself a favor and look up those restrictions because guess what, guys? There's no, you can't claim ignorance when it comes down to the law, to not knowing the law, especially when it ties back to firearms. All right, we gotta remember that, y'all. We're now in a position to say, hey, I didn't know I couldn't have this gun. So that's the first thing you want to do is make sure, can you conceal in this particular state? Once you know you can conceal in said state, a couple things I always like to say to check off, create a checklist and check it off. Number one, magazine capacity, very important these days. Every state's a little bit different. Every gun's a little bit different, right? Is there ammo capacity here in Virginia? Yes and no. Yes, if you don't have your conceal. You can't have anything over 21 rounds. If you have your conceal, no, you're good to go. You can walk around with that, what they call it, the extendo and all the other junk that y'all like, your young kids like to call it. Kia, is there a magazine capacity in North Carolina?
No. In general, you know, basically there's some kind of restrictions in North Carolina about capacities or calibers or anything like that.
Okay. Oh, and Kia just hit another one on the head. Caliber. That's another important one as well. But before I go to the caliber, I'm going to touch back to the magazine because the magazine capacity is one that gets a lot of people in trouble. All right? Remember that. That's one that gets a lot of people in trouble. So, for example, New York, 10-round capacity. Can't have anything over 10 rounds. And that's including the one that's in the chamber. So you can't load 10, put one in the head, and load another, the 10. That's 11 rounds. You go to jail. California, same thing. I believe Utah have, even though they don't hold magazines, the revolvers, if I'm not mistaken, have to skip every hole, every chamber, whatever it's called, you have to skip around. So you can't just have all five. You have to go 1, 3, which is crazy, but I believe that's Utah. So look it up because that's the easiest thing. You may think you're not breaking the law. Get pulled over. Hey,
wait a minute.
Do you have your conceal?
Go ahead. What's the reason for that?
I have no clue.
I'm just curious.
I know, right? I don't know. I guess
probably goes back to the days of those, the single action revolvers from, you know, like the black powder and the early cartridge firearm era, where you know you had to carry the pistol hammer down on an empty chamber, because if you dropped it, could go off. They didn't have a hammer safety back then.
Okay.
It probably got something to do with that, although I'm not exactly sure.
I hope that's what it is, because that's the only thing that can make sense.
But that doesn't explain why you'd have to skip every other chamber.
I don't know. But don't quote me, guys. I believe it's Utah or one of those states next to Utah. So, again, magazine capacity, check it out. Then ammo type restriction. That goes two ways. That goes to the type of caliber, so caliber restriction. Some states, California, we're looking at you, restrict certain types of rounds. They have caliber restrictions. Find out your caliber restrictions because you don't want to be going into your neighboring state with that beautiful 45. You know, you're talking about, I have this brand new 1911, and next thing you know, felt that easy, right? Because you didn't look it up. So that's one thing. Another thing, hollow point versus full metal jacket. Folks, that's the
South
one with
Carolina.
The pointy nose with no hole in it. That's the FMJ. South Carolina. What? Why? That makes zero sense because for those of you that know the difference, hollow points have a little hole in it. So when it's fired, of course, aerodynamics kicked in. And the hole slows it down. Wind hits it, slows it down. And when it hits a body, that hole is filled up with whatever it hits, and it expands. That way it slows the bullet down drastically to stop over-penetration. A full metal jacket, pointy, round, flat, it don't matter. Once it's coming at you, it's pointy. When it hits you, it's going to go right through. South Carolina says no to hollow points, which are deemed defense rounds in a lot of other states, and says yes to full metal, which are deemed target or practice rounds in a lot of other states. So, again, if I'm coming down from North, from Virginia, and I'm going to say, Key, I'm going to stop by you. We're about to go meet up with Elliot in South Carolina. Me and Key both roll with hollow points because our states allow us to have hollow points. And now we're crossing state lines. We get pulled over. We have hollow points, felony. That simple. Another one as well. Another one is rest stops. Can you legally carry in a rest stop? Yeah. Maryland, you can't. You cannot carry in a rest stop. Here in the state of Virginia, if the rest stop is owned by a federal whatever, I forgot what the term is, if the sign says you cannot bring firearms in here by law, they're having some rest stops up and down 95 to where you cannot carry even your concealed into a rest stop. Again, Maryland, you can't. You have to leave your firearm in the car. Now, for me and my wife, just so we don't mind, we already know what we're going to do at a rest stop. That is for us to know and for no one else to find out. But whatever you decide to do, you have to come to terms that if shit hits the fan, you got to be prepared to deal with those. You cannot say you didn't know. All right?
Right.
So that's another thing as well. Can you legally carry in a rest stop? Very, very important to know. And the last thing I'm going to leave you all with, two things. Well, two and a half. One, how can you conceal in your car or riding with your vehicle, traveling with your firearm, in a vehicle. Concealing a vehicle looks different in different states. Just because I have my conceal, not every state allows me to wear my conceal on me in a vehicle. Some states, even if you have your conceal, still require you to take the firearm off of you, put it in a box, or I mean, I call it a box, a case, and put it secure under the seat or in the trunk, even if you have your conceal. So you want to make sure you look that up in your state, in whatever state you're visiting. And another one, letting law enforcement know you have your firearm on you. Some states, it is your responsibility to let law enforcement know that you have a firearm on you before they ask. In the state of Virginia, you do not have to let law enforcement know you have a firearm on you unless they ask. You see the difference? If you get pulled over in a certain state and they find out you have a firearm 10 minutes into the interaction, you can get in trouble because you didn't disclose that information at the initial the start of the conversation. In the state of Virginia, however, I don't have to disclose that information unless law enforcement say, hey, do you have any weapons on you in this car? And then at that point, I have to say, yes, I do. Here's my conceal. It's here on me wherever. All right. And then the last one, I thought this one was interesting. This don't really tie back to it. This ties back a little bit. Drinking with your firearm. I had a lot of students ask me over the last 2 weeks, can I go into a bar or a club or to a restaurant that serves alcohol with my firearm? The answer to that is depends on the state. In the state of Virginia, I can legally go into a bar that serves alcohol, but I can't drink. If I drink, it's illegal with my firearm, concealed or not. However, in a place like Florida, they first define what a bar is. So it's illegal for me to sit at a bar with a firearm in the state of Florida, even if I don't drink. But if I go a couple feet away and I sit at a table with my firearm concealed, I can legally order alcohol. So again, I thought that was an interesting one. I thought that was insane on Florida's side that allows me to drink I didn't have my firearm, but that's one. That's the last one I'll leave you all with. So, again, when it comes down to preparation, folks, it's not all about preparing for doomsday or the end of the world. It could be something as, are you prepared to take that trip? You know,
yeah.
You carry your gun on you all the time. You're about to drive cross country. Last year, my wife and I, we took the family cross country to Nevada. The kids, we asked the kids where they wanted to go, and they said Vegas. So we was like, all right, let's drive. We packed up two cars, and we drove cross country. And guess what? Every step of the way, I pulled up my reciprocity map. And the route we took allowed us to conceal in every single one of those states. Now, here we are, not even a full year later, that route looks completely different. Did you all know that the Las Vegas don't share reciprocity with a lot of states anymore? That blew my mind when I first saw that.
I didn't know that. But yeah. I got a Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act permit, and that does preempt a lot of any state and local jurisdiction with regard to any ammunition that is not prohibited by the National Firearms Act of 1934. So that means that I can carry, using that permit, provided it's current, I can use that permit to carry hollow point ammunition in any state because hollow point ammunition is not prohibited by the National Firearms Act of 1934.
See, Sarge, you know all the little loopholes, man.
But to the average
it's not a loophole,
person,
man.
Sarge.
Okay, Congress wrote that law. The Congress passed that one. And, you know, that's why I said that the only problem with that thing is you got to renew it every year.
That was a slight flex. That was a slight flex.
You
got to
renew it every year. That's the problem.
No, cousin, I don't need that. I can carry hollow points to whatever state I want.
Yeah, but you got to renew it every year. It's a pain in the butt. And you got to go to the range and qualify under the issuing state. Now, even though I retired from Illinois, I got to qualify under the Georgia Police Officers Standards and Training Act. So I got to take their firearms test every year, and I got to renew it every year.
Yeah.
Dwayne, it's one thing that's so funny that you said when you were talking about, Dwayne, about something as simple. In North Carolina, what I try to drill into my students is, especially with concealed and carry and driving their car, it's the difference between whether you're locked, whether your glove box is locked or unlocked, right? So if your glove box is unlocked, it's illegal. Okay?
That's crazy.
If you don't have a conceal.
That's crazy.
If it's locked, you're fine. So, you know, it's like, hey, I didn't know it was I'm sorry. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So people, it's like really understanding the laws. And it's so funny because I had people in my – I had some older gentlemen in my class, and they were like, I am pushing 75 years old. I never knew these – I never know these things, So it's like different things that you just know, like as simple as putting your key in your glove box and locking it and as opposed to riding with it unlocked.
Now,
exactly.
My question is about this. Now, some vehicles – don't have a locking Glock box, nor do they have a truck, say, like Jeep CJ5 or something like that. What if you're driving
so
a vehicle
now,
like that with regard to that? Depends. I know
then
it depends
don't drive,
on
then the don't carry your firearm with you.
I know for the one with no trunk, like a hatchback, they say it has to be to the rarest of the vehicle. But, I mean, whatever is assumed at the trunk, that's where it has to be. Even though it can't be locked, it has to be there. And the ammo has to be up front with you.
Separate.
Like on the
yeah.
sheet or something like that.
Okay.
Now, for those vehicles like my car, I don't believe have a lock. Go ahead.
How about lock? How about in a
lockable
case? How about in a lockable case in a vehicle without that sort of trunk or
this is what I tell them, Sarge.
You need a lockable case.
Well, I tell them this, Sarge. You know those gun – that's okay. That's okay. The gun locks, you know, the metal cable gun locks.
Sure.
I tell them if you don't have, let's say if your lock on your glove box is broken, or whatever, you gotta leave. If you have to leave, you're going somewhere. We have to leave your gun in your car. Your seats are bolted to your car. Okay, take that cable, take it around your case, connect it to your seat. That track, if your seat goes up and forward and backwards, and that because that's bolted to your car.
someone will have to basically take a blowtorch and get a loose, right? By the time they do all that, it's not worth it. So bolt it to your car that way, and that way it's secure, and it's out of, it basically it's legally locked, so you can't get to it easily. So that those are the things I explained, and we had the police, Raleigh Police Department in there, and he said that would be perfectly fine. So I tell students, hey, if you don't have a trunk or you don't have a, or your lock is broken or something like that, just make sure you, or you're traveling somewhere where you can't take it with you, then just lock it to your slide and your seat slides back and forth, because basically someone will have to just unhinge your whole seat to take the, in order to steal your gun.
Got it. Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
It's a lot, y'all. It's a lot.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, they love to make
power
you jump.
Comes great responsibility.
Second Amendment ain't really in the United States Constitution. You know, it ain't really there. It just looks like it's there.
I know. It just looks like it's there. Oh, man. It's just so crazy how everything by state. You know, we'll think that we're one United States, right? We're one nation. But the states, man, we're like a bunch of little countries. Every single state has their own set of rules, man. And it's just crazy how we can be neighboring states and the laws around firearms can be just so drastically different. I want to leave you all with one more thing, too. The most important thing with traveling with your firearm and preparing. And that one important thing is knowing how to protect yourself, defend yourself in different states, because defending yourself with a firearm looks different in different states. In a state like
That's
Texas,
true.
You can do, I don't want to say you can do whatever you want, but Texas is, you can defend yourself for almost
more
any
liberal
type of bias whatsoever. Yeah, there
yeah.
you go. That's the best way to say it. But, you know, when you go to these different states, look at it as well. Look up how can I defend myself legally as a guest, because you got to remember you are a guest in these states. So you may go to a place like D.C., but guess what? You're a guest coming from a state that's very pro-2A, where a place like D.C. is not. You know, I always use the example where I'm at in Virginia. I'm like more closer to Richmond, but I'm like very south of Richmond, actually. And I'll tell my students, we have Fairbanks, Virginia, which is pretty much D.C. It's right down the street from D.C. They're not big firearm people. They're not big Second Amendment because they're D.C. A lot of people from D.C. live there, but they work in D.C. It's just the rent is cheaper, mortgages are cheaper. So there are people from D.C. that live right there. If I have to defend myself with a firearm there, it's going to look different than me defending myself out in a Dansville, a Keysville, where everyone in those areas are very pro-Second Amendment. They understand about self-protection, right? So, again, that's something that you definitely want to look up. How can I legally defend myself in the states that I'm driving through or the states that I'm visiting? You know, does the state have CASA doctrine? What falls under the CASA doctrine law? For those of you that don't know CASA doctrine, it is pretty much your home is your castle, and you can protect your home or your castle up to utilizing deadly force. But with some states, it says with restrictions. With Virginia, we observe CASA doctrine, but the fine print says with under certain circumstances. Where a place like Texas, there's no certain circumstances. It's 110% CASA doctrine out there. Defend your home if someone puts a pinky toe on your property. So look all that stuff up, folks. Don't get yourself jammed up because you didn't want to prepare to travel with your firearm. All right? And don't let nobody call you paranoid.
Dwayne, there's one thing I want to talk about, too, that I know you guys just had a law passed, I think, what, July 1st, that now marijuana is legal in your state, right? Do you have up to an ounce?
Say that again? Yes. Yes.
So what people don't realize, and I saw someone else posted this, and then I read about it. It kept popping up. But it's basically the, you know, people are, you know, so quick to run out and get the marijuana cards and all that good stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? If you have that marijuana card, you cannot own a firearm. And people
you
are like, what?
Own a firearm.
So the thing of the matter is, it may be legal on a state level, but unless it's legal on a federal level, you cannot own a firearm and smoke marijuana. And that's the thing that people don't understand, that if you do and you're found in possession of marijuana, you're basically going to get, what is it, class 2 or class 4 misdemeanor or something like that. But it's like, hey, people need to understand the law. Well, I got a guy. It's legal. No, it's not. It is legal, but the federal government says you can't own a firearm now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now that is a big one. So now ask yourself, folks, what is important to you? Getting high, or the ability to protect yourself whenever you want on your own terms? I know which one I'm picking. I know exactly which one I'm picking. Now, I'm saying there's
but the thing of the matter is, it's so
high.
Funny, Dwayne. A lot of people don't realize it. They don't realize it.
Yeah.
They think now it's legal. It's all legal.
Yeah. That's so funny because, I had to pull these young kids. I go to the gun store all the time, and I have to stop these young kids from going into the gun store one day because, you know, I was leaving, and they were walking in. And I got a whiff, and I was like, yo, they smell like they are about to get into some trouble. You know what I mean? Like, they smell like they're about to go in here and be told your stuff is delayed, and I'll be right back with your paperwork. And it's just a matter of they don't know. You know, they just feel like, oh, it's the first, and I'm ready to go, and yada, yada, you know what I mean? And not realizing that, that's not how that works. They're going to smell you because you smell like exactly what you're doing. There's nothing wrong with that. If that's your culture, that's your culture. But you got to understand the two can't legally merge. I love that you brought that up.
Right.
That's a big one because I do have to start bringing that up in my class. I lightly mention it, but I love the fact that you put it, like you really put the law on it, you know, because I feel like that's very important for people to know. It's very important for them to know.
Because they don't understand the difference between the federal law and the state law. Do you know what I'm saying? So until the federal government says, hey, everybody can smoke marijuana, right? Until that happens, you are in violation of federal law, and you cannot have marijuana and a firearm.
Yeah,
so,
it's crazy, but hey, that's the law. And
hopefully
those
people
are
will remember that. Hopefully they'll remember. They will remember that because – if you get caught with it, you pretty much can kiss your firearm bye-bye.
Yeah, and I don't want to kiss my firearms bye-bye. I don't. I don't, no. Because when shit hits the fan, I can't throw weed at them. So, you know, and it's just one of those unfortunate things.
Well, maybe if they're a bunch of weed heads.
It might. You know, but it's just so sad that that's how, you know, it's just there's something bigger at play, you know, and there's always what's bigger at play is how do we take away the guns? Let me not say how we take away the guns, right? Let me dial it back. It's how do we take away the ability of the people to protect themselves from us if they have to? I think that's a nicer way to put it. But no, Key, I love the topic of today's show. I know some of our listeners that's used to hearing us, I guess, pop off on a lot of stuff. It was a little different vibe of show. But I like it because it brings everything back to the reality, you know, the reality of why do you carry? Why should you carry? Preparation, what does that look like? You know, we're not out here telling everybody to go get guns, even though I'm telling everybody I can legally own a firearm. Go get your firearm. Increase those numbers first, y'all. But for those of you that don't want to get a firearm, still prepare, man. Go buy some water. Go buy, if you don't, yo, how many times have you had, I've had a couple people stop me and say, hey, do you have jumper cables? What? You have a car with no jumper cables? That's not preparation. You know, like.
And thank you, Sarge. Thank you, Sarge, for being our honorary guest today.
No, I do it every single time because you guys are the best and the greatest, and I thank you for the information you bring to the public at large because it's a very important matter. And, again, I urge you to study the story of Lance Thomas. I wish most police officers prepared themselves for a gunfight as well as this guy did.
We'll definitely start doing some research about
right
that.
Now.
So thank
Absolutely.
You guys so much for joining Point Blank. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you again for Sarge. We always enjoy your knowledge. And you guys, meet us back here, same time, same place, same bat station.
All right.
Good night, y'all.
Good night, y'all.